Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Dance Futures podcast, the podcast that discusses dance as a way of life with people who've made it central to theirs. I'm your host, Dr. Ruth Pettybridge, professional dance geek. I'm recording this from a hotel room in London, in Greenwich, having been to visit the Laban Centre, the Laban Conservatoire for Music and Dance. Such a beautiful building. But it has got me thinking about contested histories and long-term legacies of certain people and practices, I guess. And that feels really relevant to the interview today with Vidya Patel and the geek out that I subsequently do, looking a little bit into the history of Kathak dance, which is one of Vidya's techniques that she works with. Vidya was a BBC Young Dancer in 2015. You might recognise her from that. She was the first person to dance in the South Asian category. She's also currently one to watch, young choreographer for Sadler's Wells, and also look out for her latest collaboration on BBC Dance Passion. That's out now. So there's loads of things to follow up from this episode, and I will put lots of links and information in the show notes, so do check that out if you want to follow up. Vidya's generosity of spirit just shines through this interview, and I'm sure that you will take that away, and I hope we can all, in fact, take that away and bring it into the world a little bit more. Vidya, am I saying that right? And was that the correct pronunciation? Great. I'm super excited to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving me and the Dance Futures podcast your time on this flexible Friday. So my first question, I guess, is what can you remember the moment or the time in your life where you realized, dance is going to be important to me? Whether you knew it's like, I'm going to do this in a professional context, but that you were like, this is something I want to be doing and it needs to be in my life, that feeling that I think a lot of us kind of recognize.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm also trying to think back, you know, when was it sort of like, when was the seed sort of implanted in my mind? And I think it goes back to when I was like little, like just did dancing in the community, like for like family events and occasions. I think that's where the seed was really planted of like, okay, dancing for fun, I'm enjoying it, it's a hobby. But I think it was seeing like other dance professionals that they do this for a living, like, and that was mainly through the CAP program really that I attended in Birmingham Dance Exchange. And it was like we had guest artists coming in from like nationally and internationally, and we're in the studio and they were like, yeah, I do this for a living, you know, teaching workshops, performing. I was just like mind blown, like,
yeah, like, oh, that's God, possible,
this is possible, like, yeah, you can get paid to, you know, do what you love. And I think it's also a thing of like my parents, like they're not really from a dance background, but they had such an interest in like Indian classical dance or just things that were related to our culture, that whenever something happened in Birmingham, they were like, okay, you need to go and see this. So we were just watching like shows that took place, and it was just exciting to see like new things in town, people performing. So I think it was like a continuous thing of information, lot of different people, and then just my parents' interest that sort of wasn't like you need to become professional, but we were always encouraged to appreciate, I think, art and dance and value it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that's such a huge part of the valuing of it, is such a huge part of that enables people to sort of take that risk, I think, as well, to make it a profession or make a choice to continue to study it. You know, that I meet students still today where they're sort of going against their parents because it's not seen as a traditional subject to study, and it makes such a difference, doesn't it, to have that kind of understanding and support around you. I think, was that, you mentioned Dance Exchange, was there quite a big community of
sort of dances and community dances and things like that that you were a part of then growing up, did it feel more part of everyday life in a way? Or I'm curious, because you said dancing at celebrations and things like that. And
yeah, I think we were doing it a lot, because basically my sisters, they set up like a youth company. So on the weekend, like, they'd get together, choreograph like dances. And it was mainly like friends that would join and come in, but obviously pay like maybe like £1-2 to join, so we could like cover the costs.
Yeah.
So like they had this youth dance company that was called Divers Dance Company. And it was like Bollywood, semi-classical, dance, creative dance, and they used to create, and I was like the youngest one there, and it was just really exploratory. Like, it wasn't it was just like grassroots, like, we've got space, let's dance. And we sort of performed at like a range of places, like weddings, like events that happened in Birmingham, or art festivals. So we did like a range of things, and I think through that I really got performance experience that I wasn't necessarily getting through like Indian classical dance, because through my dance teacher, and this was like kind of before the CAP program, it was like we'd have like one performance a year, so it wasn't like regular. But with this like youth dance company, it was like we had a few more performances, there was a regular thing going. So I think that was like a continuous, but then also whilst going to CAT, there was a lot more like opportunities that came about of like performing classical Indian dance, which was like a lot of dancers coming nationally, because in Birmingham it's the only South Asian strand of CAT, so they focus on Kathak and Bharatanatyam. So two of the eight Indian classical dance forms are sort of focused, and it's still running now. But when I had joined, it was like the pilot year. So it was still like testing, you know, is this something that's possible?
Amazing.
According to like your family's like income, you could get a bursary for your dance training to like be supported and support your local dance classes that you went to. So it was really influential for me.
That's so interesting. And just for people who might not know what CAT stands for, it's the Centre for Advanced Training, which run in different parts of the country and sort of help to facilitate people who might want to go on and study dance professionally. So before that point, eventually, before the audition point, isn't it, for further training. And I didn't know that about the South Asian focus in Birmingham. And I think one of the things that really I feel like we're unpacking in kind of dance research is this idea is the sort of, I guess, the post-colonial kind of idea that there's these techniques that exist that are, that what we think about as technique is often an assumed ideology, actually, that comes from a white Western perspective and isn't actually embedded in a more global acknowledgement that there are these other kinds of techniques that are just as technically demanding and just as codified and just as, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I think there's something really important there about the way that we talk about technique sometimes, and the way that technique is assumed to be these particular styles, that that I'm really sort of heartened to hear that that exists. I'm like, that's great that that's happening. And also that my dance geek kind of went, ooh, when you said two of the eight South Asian dance styles, because obviously Kathak and Bharatanatyam is like that, we're all like, okay, yeah, we know about those. Or at least most people, I hope, have sort of heard of those. But you said eight different styles, and now I'm like, I need to know what those are.
Yeah, so there's eight altogether. There's Odissi as well. There's Kathakali. There's Mohiniyattam. Oh my God, do you know what? I'm being tested here as we speak. There's also a few that have like transitioned from being seen as like folk dance into classical dance. There's Mayurbhanj Chow, and that's like kind of like a martial art dance. And there are a few more.
I love it. We've got a challenge. We've got a research challenge.
My head. But there are 8 altogether, and they're really distinct depending on their geographical
sort of pace,
their histories, and they're so rich in their technique and sort of what they stand for. So every time I sort of do see these Indian classical dance forms in their ultimate sort of form and tradition, I'm like, wow, it's endless for what there is to learn, but also like to appreciate and be like, that's another form that I don't know about. And it's quite humbling actually when I'm like, or find out about it. But in the UK, Bharatanatyam, Kathak, there is a lot more focus on those, but I also know the practitioners from the Odyssey, Mohiniyattam, and also the other day I met a dancer who's Kandyan dance, so that comes specifically from Sri Lanka. Okay. And such a beautiful art form, and it's so nice to know that someone, you know, in the UK is practicing and doing it. So there's a lot of richness to it, which is exciting and excites me.
Yeah, that's great. And I feel like I'm going to skip forward. I want to pick up on that, kind of on that question, I guess, a little bit of, there's so many things, but of technique and sort of how, well, two things actually. I suppose one thing is that, as you say, sort of knowing that these people exist in the UK, I feel like you sort of had you were brought into the public eye in 2015 on BBC Young Dancer. And definitely some people probably had never seen Indian classical dance before. You would have been very much sort of representing in a way. Did you feel like that? Did you feel a pressure or a kind of responsibility of any kind of like, okay, I'm this is my moment to kind of show what this is? Or was it much more about your own practice?
It was a quite crazy like experience actually, looking back on it, because I think that sense of responsibility was definitely there, because you're the only person representing that category on a level that is, you know, broadcasted, but then also on like the Sadler's Wells main stage, which like I never thought in my dreams that would happen, but it was just like all these big things happening all at once. So I think for myself, I had to keep reminding myself that, you know, this is about where I am in my stage of training and development. So there was this, even though there was that pressure, it was reminding myself that, you know, I am doing this for myself as well. I have put my hard work into it.
Yeah.
But then also honoring like and valuing all the work that people have done in the past that had made the opportunity happen.
Yeah.
And like to even be included alongside, you know, hip hop, ballet, contemporary, and then have South Asian as a category is a huge thing that doesn't just like come about. It doesn't just happen. And it's through the hard work really that people have done on creating awareness in this country about, you know, these art forms, that they exist, they're there, they're being practiced, they're being involved. So I think for me it was definitely a responsibility, but also I think I had responsibility for myself as well, as just like a young person. And luckily, you know, because it was the first time it happened, we didn't really know what it was going to look like on TV. Like, we were just, I'll say it to everyone, I was just happy to be there. Going with the flow of it. Very happy to be there. And I was just, I had a lot of appreciation for like my teacher who had put in the time, Sujata Banerjee, to sort of choreograph the pieces. I had a chance to work with Urja Desai Thakur from Bhagrav Dance, who she's also touring her work now. So, and then also having a chance to like collaborate with a musician, Shami Pithia, who it's like, if that competition hadn't happened, I don't think I'd have been able to make that connection. So I was just like, you know, reaching out, love your music, would you like to be on board of this? And he was like, yeah, I would love to. So those sort of relationships that happened then, and even with Connor who won, it's like they've still continued. Like we're friends, we keep in touch, we've yeah. worked together. So I think it was a start of like a lot of things for me, and opening my mind to like the world of dance in a greater sense,
in a broader sense. Yeah. And you mentioned there like Sadler's Wells, and then the work you've been sort of mentioned as being a choreographer to watch, one to watch kind of thing, the next generation. And I suppose I'm curious about that your relationship to tradition mm-hmm. in that, and sort of how I watched a film that you'd created, and which was sort of much more minimal in terms of sort of the aesthetic, I guess, than you'd associate with traditional South Asian dance. And I sort of thought, I want it, you know, how, what is the kind of work that you want to make? How does that sit in relationship to tradition? And are you able to sort of separate them and go, I've got this practice, my Kathak, which is sort of sacred to me, and I'm always going to do that, and that's the foundation. And then there's this other things that I do. And I wondered sort of whether, how you find the responses to that, to you sort of also growing as an artist from people yeah. maybe that were part of your past or part of that training history.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that I'm also questioning as I go into different places, as
yeah.
I am developing my sort of artistic voice and practice as well. Like it's all it's just evolving every day. So for myself, I look at my Kathak practice as something, you know, that it's a foundation to my work. It's something that I've probably had the most training or experience in out of the other stuff that I have delved in. So that will always influence me in a way, even though yeah. I may not consciously think about it. But then also there's moments where I'm like consciously thinking about, okay, I would love to involve elements of that into this work or that I'm creating. So I think it's a foundation that I really honor, and I still will practice, and I would love to still perform in its yeah. its purest classical form. But even that for me is a different thing, because what are the things that I want to speak about
yeah.
that are relevant to me and my life and stories? So I think my work now is really taking my interest as just like, you know, a human being, like what interests me. I love art, I love music, love listening to different music. I love poetry, and sort of even film as well, getting experience into that. It's everything is kind of contributing to my practice. So Kathak will always remain, but I'm quite excited in trying to see myself in different ways that I haven't seen myself before, and also try and create the unexpected for audiences who may expect something from me or mm-hmm. my work as well. So I'm continuously trying to find out what that is for myself.
Yeah.
But I'm very much like, okay, when I will practice Kathak traditionally, I will do it, you know, in the traditional way. And there may be points, you know, where I'm practicing to jazz music, and mm. that's totally valid, but that's for myself. And I'm learning to, as I sort of explore, that actually the main thing is about me.
Yeah.
And my exploration, because yeah. you can sometimes be like, oh, that person thought this, or that yeah. person thought that of me, or it's not seen as the right thing to do in terms of classical form. But I really question that, and it's like things are always going to be changing.
Yeah.
And if we don't be true to ourselves, then, you know, what's the point if we're just trying to do it to please people?
Yeah. And that's the role, that's definitely, I feel like I'm hearing you talking as an artist there about like your growth through exploring the form that you're a part of in whatever way feels right for the work that you're going to create, and the things that are important to you, rather than sort of serving the form,
yeah.
which I think sometimes in more classical techniques as well, that can that can sort of happen, the relationship between the body and the technique, is that you're sort of just striving to be the best at the technique, but it's not necessarily anything to do with your own kind of authenticity or what you want to communicate. So yeah, that feels like it's hopefully a really healthy evolution as well, you know, from that kind of, any kind of constraints around that. But it comes also from a real place of knowledge, doesn't it? Of like, no, you really know the form as well. Yeah. And so that departure is with respect, isn't it? It's not, it's also not sort of taking little bits and here and there and sort of, you know, appropriating everything, because you're fully embedded in that, which I think is really significant and reads in the work that you go on to create, actually, you know, that I think that will have, you know, real integrity. Yeah, for sure. I feel like this is maybe like, well, actually, let's stick with that a second. So in terms of like different, just to sort of dig in a little bit more to your process, like those different styles and techniques and forms that you might be exploring, you mentioned like maybe you're doing Kathak to jazz music. How do you physically sort of explore those ideas, these different styles together? Is there, have you developed some sort of like practices or methods for yourself to do that, or is it still quite an organic thing?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm still like going through finding out what it is, but say if it's like, I found with jazz music there's a lot of openness to it, but still there is a structure, like but I think more so in the pandemic, like just listening to so much more music or having the time to really listen rather than, you know, being on the road and having music. So it's not just like a making a conscious decision to, you know, really pay attention. I think that has really sort of made me want to move through that music differently, like rather than choosing like my specific traditional music. So I think like, for example, like rhythm, like there's always like rhythm, different rhythms. So seeing how I can play with that. But even if it's just footwork practice, like just doing it to different tracks and different tempos, and seeing where I can like highlight different beats. So playing with that really. And then also other stuff that I've been playing with is just like visualization and imagination. And it's a tool that we all have. Yeah. And I'm doing a lot more like guided improvisations in my work of even when I'm with like dance artists in a room, it's like, how do I see what they're imagining, or like trying to sort of get that out of them. And I'm playing a lot with like imagination and visualization and creating different environments in your mind that could really influence or inform your movement in the work. So it's quite I'm at a stage right now that is really like exploring.
Exciting.
And it's still I'm still like, okay, I will practice my dance form in the traditional way of like, usually it's, nowadays we've got apps on our phone, which they when you're practicing live, like you'd have tabla, the percussion sort of there as an accompaniment. And you'd have like a tampura, which is played usually in a traditional setting. You'd have a lot of instruments accompanying you and artists, but now from our phones we've got like these apps, and it's like called like iTabla, and you can just like practice with that. So it's insane, like with technology, because we have like the 16 beat time cycle that you can practice with, but then also we have repertoire to 10 beat time cycles, 12, and it just goes on. It's like your repertoire for Dindal, which is 16, can then be transferred to 10 beat. So we can actually do that, do like accompaniment from our phones. So the times have moved on as well in like what's possible now in terms of practicing Kathak as well in your own space, because it really is a solo art form. Thinking like how do we keep the soloness of it, but then how do we also come together as like a unified in a unified shared space as like
That's so interesting. Yeah, and you mentioned then being in a studio with other dancers, so tell me a bit about what you're like a day in the life now, or like what are you working on now? Is that more leading workshops, or are you trying to generate that sense of collaboration? And it, when you say that about Kathak, it's interesting because I kind of go, oh, it's true in my mind's eye, you know, talking about visualization, that when I think about it, I think about a solo performer with the musicians around. That's sort of the visual image of it I have in my mind. It's sort of like, oh yes, I have just never sort of occurred to me that. So yeah, I guess that's such an interesting step for you and challenge and opportunity to kind of investigate. So is that part of what you're doing at the moment? Are you working on something specific? Tell me what's happening.
So right now I just finished a commission with Emergence Dance, which was really beautiful to have like those 14 dance artists in the room. I'm playing a lot with spoken word, improv, and the impulses of words and text in movement. So for me, that was a really sort of a great space to explore sort of my interest of like poetry on like a scale of time that I hadn't before, with like 3 weeks, which was a lot for me. So right now when I'm going into workshops, I'm trying to sort of find a sort of a harmonious way of moving together. Even though it may be rooted from Indian classical dance, it's like, even if I have different people with different styles and training and art forms like in the space, like how do I go about finding like a key sort of movement language between us that is like, it's not identifiable of where practices may come from. So I'm trying to explore that a bit more. But then in the back of my mind, we've got like a main stage commission for the Saddle as well as Young Associate Programme this year.
Yeah.
So it's coming up quite soon. So in the back of my mind, whenever I'm like going into a workshop or even seeing dancers, like I'm just on the lookout, and also in my mind, everything is influencing me.
Yeah.
Just like life. I'm just trying to be a bit more aware about everything. Yeah. I don't know how bad that is or not, but
ignorance is bliss.
It's just like just paying more attention to different things that I like and would like to sort of involve in that work specifically, or future works even, because sometimes I think if you give yourself the pressure of, you know, in that one piece you've got to do everything, it's impossible.
Impossible. When is that happening?
So that's going to be happening later in the year. The dates will be released soon, but there will be like a process of auditions that we do as well. So there's myself, John William Watson, Olive, and also Magnus. So the four of us will be part of like a mixed bill.
Amazing. Well, I will be looking out for that, as I'm sure will many people. That's super exciting. And yeah, it's tricky, isn't it, when you're creating something and there's that, it's really exciting, but it's also very, I always think with performance, dance, choreography, it's very bizarre how it doesn't exist yet, and you commit to things before the thing exists. And so there's this kind of drop into trusting the process that it will evolve and become what it's meant to be for that thing. And you know, yeah, that's a world that so many people are familiar with funding as well, you know.
And
projecting forward
about that, like as well, it's so important to be aware of it as well, but at the same time it's like, okay, how do we find ourselves within it as like artists doing that? So it is an interesting one, as well as like the trust that you mentioned, like a lot of trust just in processes and yourself and people around you.
So on the funding sort of side of things, you're obviously in this position now where you're getting support and some profile raising. But I know that there was this mapping project, I don't know if you know about this, in 2021, of the South Asian dance and music sector. Did you?
Yeah.
Which was just talking about how low the applications were in that sector, and also the progression routes. So this is why CAT Birmingham is so important. But do you have an opinion on why that is, other than it's kind of, you know, structural racism? You know, so I'm like, well, there's the big elephant in the room. Yeah, exactly. So obviously that's why, but also I suppose on a more micro level, somehow, do you have any opinions on why that might be, or ways that the sector could better support and encourage? Is it just about visibility, or are there other mechanisms there, do you think?
I think with that particular report, I remember skimming over it, and it was just, I think, some of the language used as well, it was like, I was sort of questioning it's questioning the language, and I didn't sort of take a lot of energy in really taking it in, but there are less sort of South Asian dancers sort of applying and getting funding, and I think it is for a lot of reasons, which there's a lot of factors that come into it. I think it's about the stability of our dance profession, also the systemic sort of racism that has taken place in the past and still exists today. Also, I think there is that, because just speaking from my own experience, I've only applied once to Arts Council, and I am hoping to apply again, but that one time that I did apply, it was when I was an associate artist at Data Derby, and Phil Hargreaves, who was there at the time, really encouraged me to sort of like apply for the Developing Your Creative Practice grant. And I think it was just that encouragement that someone shows, and being like, do you know what? You're at a level that you can actually do this. And why not? Just go for it. And also being a person there to sort of listen to my ideas and hear them through. I think since the pandemic and obviously the Black Lives Matter that came about after George Floyd's murder, there's been a lot of conversation on diversity, inclusion, equality, and all of that, and there has been a lot more opportunities as well since the pandemic, and like individually I'm trying to, you know, bridge the gaps of like opportunities and the people who sort of need them and want them as well. So I created this community network called South Asian Dance Artists UK. Again, the name, I'm thinking of changing it.
Well, it does what it says on the tin, though, isn't it? Like, sometimes you need to have that clarity, so people know where to go and what to look for.
And it's just that thing of it's evolving. I'm trying to sort of share opportunities, but again, it's a voluntary thing. But also, there's a lot more people now, I feel, and I sense, that are sharing opportunities a lot more. Because certainly my sort of thinking is, if you share, it's like, it's just better for everyone. What's the attitude that has been in the past, I guess, of keeping it to yourself because you're scared about the scarcity of the opportunities, which creates unhealthy competition. And I think for myself and like the generation right now, I'm really for breaking that unhealthy competition, because I just think it's really unnecessary. If you see someone doing great work, support, congratulate them, share their work. It's like I'm about sort of creating a healthy, sustainable and sort of positive environment within the dance sector for, you know, those who want to do it.
And I think that it's that scarcity culture is really big in like you say in the dance sector in general, that kind of idea of competition and fungibility, which is a good word, which is like the replacement of one with the other, you know, that you're just replaceable, which is a whole sort of bigger picture, isn't it, about the objectification of dancers' bodies in dance and the hierarchy between choreographers and dancers and sort of unhealthy mindsets as well about pushing through certain things so that you can just carry on at all costs because otherwise your job isn't safe. And these are recurring themes in these conversations that I have. And so I think it's really encouraging and hopeful for the future of dance, coming to the Dance Futures, name of this podcast, that there are people like yourself and there are lots of artists out there who are kind of trying to change the discourse and change the practice and have that kind of more abundant, generous mindset. But I think, you know, it's interesting then you're talking about diversity and these kind of, again, this rhetoric that comes up, and that if there's less representation in general, whether that, you know, like you say, it can only be a good thing to have more, supporting the next generations to kind of come up and join in and take up space is a really really great thing.
I think something in the pandemic that was really great for me was just finding out who else is out there, who else is doing, you know, work in the sector, but also in arts in general. So like actors, like writers, musicians, composers, so like in the whole of the sector, like who's out there. I'm just interested and curious and intrigued by people and creatives who have put work out there in the process of making work. And I'm always about like trying to connect with other creatives and minds, because there's so much to learn. But I think coming back to your thing about diversity and inclusion, like since the pandemic, my work has been so much more about advocacy. Conversations or questioning and putting forward ideas of like how we can find a way to do that within various organizations, panels, and boards that I'm on. It's like how do we as dance artists actually have the power to speak up and share and communicate our feelings and thoughts, and I'm finding we do actually have an important and valid opinion, which are, you know, based on experience and facts of the past. So I think I'm finding more strength in sort of not only doing it through, you know, my work, but as an individual.
Yeah.
And it encourage other dancers, dance artists to do the same, because I think with that we also cultivate a better environment for all of us going forward. So it's like if something isn't right, like we need to
change it.
And the thing is, I've also it's really helpful to know there's so many people willing to listen. In the place that we are right now, wanting to make action as well, because there is that pressure, but also it's that thing of like time conversation. There's a lot of conversations that are repeated, but sometimes it's the time that we're in that actually makes them move forward. So it can be exhausting and really energy sort of consuming, but I think coming together or having these like variety of sort of communication from individuals is really important.
I was thinking then when you were talking, I was thinking you sound like you're a very busy person and a very giving person, as well as that curiosity to reach out, that there's you know, you've got that energy and drive. And how do you rest and have, you mentioned that this morning you just got back from Glasgow teaching a workshop, and that thing of kind of traveling and being the I guess being the kind of the leader or in the space or a facilitator has a certain kind of makes a certain requirement of you, doesn't it? And is there a place in you that you can go, or like what do you do for yourself to like really look after yourself in these contexts, like you say, where some of these conversations, they have to be repeated, but also it can get tiring. Yeah. Is your dance part of that, or is that where you're like, no, Netflix?
Yeah, I think it's so important to have like another thing.
Yeah.
And for me, I do go out of like dance into like painting, or like I love doing collage work. Nice. I'm really obsessed with like incense and candles. So they're just always around in my bedroom. So I think that's just like something for myself. Love all of that. But also, I think just sharing with family, friends. Yeah. Luckily, like I've got friends outside of the dance like world as well. So it's like, can just be and not talk about dance.
Yeah, and I think it's really useful for, you know, especially a lot of the students that listen to this to kind of be reminded of that as well. Because when you listen to people who are kind of successful and they're doing their thing, and you can feel again this kind of pressure, or like, oh, I'm not doing enough maybe, but actually to recognize that everybody also has these other things in their lives and these other spaces that are really equally important, and that's also how we get away from the scarcity culture and the competition, right? Because it's like recognizing the wholeness of everybody and everybody's different kind of multifaceted lives, because there is again that sort of trope of the dancer who just kind of gives up everything to pursue their dream.
Yeah. And I think at the beginning of my career as well, I think I questioned that more, like how much sacrifice do I give for art form. And I think it's now I feel, you know, I need to bring the joy into it, because there was a moment in the pandemic where I was like really questioning, like, where is the joy in my movement? Like, what is it? And I think it came into that question, like, actually, I'm a person who also has other interests. Mm. And sometimes I think with the way dance industry is, it can be like, you know, it's a be all or end all. And it's like, for me, I'm at a stage where I'm still discovering, but my core sort of expression is dance, and it will always remain. But also like yoga, gosh, I'm loving moving through yoga.
Yeah.
And in the pandemic, that was like a huge sort of continuous movement that I was doing that wasn't my dance practice. And even things like martial arts, like delving into that, it's another form of movement that I got to experience through the work that I did with Tain Patel. And I was doing a lot of martial arts, which was great to move in a different way. But I think it is really important to, you know, find rest. And I'm trying to think of more ways to do that, like in my schedule, like how do I take out that time? You know, that time is family time, or that time is I'm not gonna look at my emails. Because the thing with freelance, and you probably find it as well, it's like you can never stop. You can always continue. And I think it's really important to create boundaries as well. And 'cause even that newsletter that I was doing, it was a lot of work, and especially after it was a labor of love. Like, I was just doing it because I wanted to share. And since everything's opened up, obviously the opportunities have increased. And I was in a place of like feeling overwhelmed by putting this into there. So for myself, you know, just being all right, I'm just taking a bit of time out, not sharing it other people will keep sharing on the WhatsApp group that we have, and letting it flow. And then when I feel like my energy's back for that, I will give it my all.
Yeah.
It's just giving, like, trying to give more permission to myself.
Yeah.
That hope the dancers also feel that they can as well.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you sort of answered the in a way, the final question, which I usually sort of, you know, finish up with, about kind of hopes and fears for the future of dance or mm-hmm. for your sort of practice. And within that kind of, it's not exactly advice, but kind of just messages to people who might be entering that world. But I feel like you've given some really key ones there in those last couple of questions. But I don't know if you've got anything to add about when you think of a dance future, whether it's for yourself or in general, what do you think? I want that to be in it. Or
yeah, that's a really good question. I think for the dance future as a whole, I just want it to be as like free as possible, so for people to really feel their own freedom, whether they're in work or making their own work, so and coming from like a really true place for themselves. And mm-hmm. and that's a reminder for myself as well, like, how do I show up all the time as my authentic self in my work, yeah. and in the places that I go to, so I'm not trying to conform in a way that is not true to me.
Yeah.
So that's something. And I think another thing that I would say for people wanting to, you know, take dance, that you can do it. Like, even if you don't see yourself in a place that you want to exist in, like, to still do it, because there's always a place for uniqueness. And I think just owning it,
yeah,
and going with it,
yeah,
is the one that I would say.
I wish that the listeners could see your little, you had like a great little, like, sort of sassy, like, I don't know what the word is, and you were like, just owning it, like, little wiggle. Yeah. And yeah, I just wanted to also ask about quickly any resources, like, if people were interested in finding out more about Kathak or the South Asian dance styles. You mentioned this, you mentioned the network that you set up, presumably that can be found with a quick Google, can it? Or are there any other resources that you'd recommend just quickly?
Yeah, definitely. So the community network that I've created is called danceartists.co.uk. The full name is South Asian Dance Artists UK. It's open to anyone who is of South Asian heritage, but also if you've got an interest in knowing more about South Asian dance in the UK. But in that newsletter, I share widely across mainstream dance, so it's a really right. open sort of yeah. newsletter. So that is a resource. There's also various organizations. There's Academy in London, Sampad in Birmingham, and various South Asian organizations for those really interested in wanting to watch more. Pugrove Dance Company by Uja Desai Thakur is currently on tour, touring a beautiful piece which has Kathak embedded in its and also anyone wanting to learn dance, my teacher Sujatha Banerjee, she's based in London, but also does online classes, and it's a really wonderful progressive way of learning the form. It's also got ISDD syllabus, so there's quite a few resources.
Amazing.
Last one I'm gonna add, just drop into there. New work out, Emergence is going to be touring, so that's a performance company, MA performance company, Joss Arnett, Salford Uni, and they're going to be touring around UK in a mixed bill, and one of the works is the one that we've created together in collaboration, so that is out there.
Amazing. We will for sure be keeping our eyes peeled for that, Vidya. Thank you so much for time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
And you too. Thanks, Ruth.
Me again. So
Normally in this bit, I digest the interview with my regular buddies on this podcast, Robin Alvarez and Luca Vaccari. Luca Vaccari is in his third year studying dance, and so many of you listening will remember what that was like. He is a busy boy. And Robin is also touring and singing and making her way in the world. So they were both busy this month. And honestly, I miss them, but also it meant I had a bit of time to do solo geeking out and looking a little bit into Katak, as discussed with Vidya. And, you know, more time for geeking out, as far as I'm concerned, is a good thing. So at first glance, when I started sort of looking into the history, well, not the history, but I was kind of looking into scholarly articles and people that have written and commented on Katak. And I was really struck by the fact that Akram Khan was always the first, I don't know, seven references, if not more. And this thing that happens sometimes that somebody becomes kind of, I guess he's like the poster boy for it, right? For this form and for also the kind of idea of cultural hybridity that's kind of often associated to his work. And no wonder. He has made some beautiful and iconic work and really brought Katak into the contemporary dance scene and discourse. And there's some fantastic writing actually out there as well about Khan's work. I really recommend following that up. But I guess it's interesting how these people sometimes become sort of figureheads or spokespeople for something somewhat unintentionally. So I took a little bit of a sidestep from that writing and I looked at Margaret E. Walker and Keith Howard's book, India's Katak Dance in Historical Perspective. And what I liked about this book straight away is that it was referring to the meta-narrative of Katak history. And what I mean by that is, wait for it, dance geeks. Well, just all geeks in general, one of my favourite words coming up. They're looking at the historiography of Katak. Boom! Anyone who can get choreography and historiography into a sentence, in the same sentence, wins the prize. I don't know what it is yet, but also, really great one for pub chat. Yeah, so the historiography of choreography and anyway, you can tell I'm really fun at the pub. So historiography is basically exactly that, the choreography of history. It's the way that history is constructed and who it's constructed by. And that kind of really releases us from seeing it as an objective fact, as something that we, things that we know happened. I guess it really points out the fact that any book, any resource that you're referring to has still been produced by somebody, right? So that is kind of liberatory, I guess, and part of a sort of more post-structural approach to history. So I got my geek on and I found it super fascinating that one of the sort of contested histories, I guess, of Katak is while it's often sort of attributed to Hindu mythology and temple dances, that also there's this sort of Islamic root. Some of the music, the drumming, and that this sort of disrupts this kind of tidy narrative of it being associated with Hindu mythology. And also Walker talks about a rewriting of history to where the Katak sort of caste system, this is a juicy bit, she writes that there's been a sort of distancing of Katak from the caste system and that Katak was a caste group from northern India that comprised of storytellers, dancers and musicians. And that instead, this history has been channeled through male Brahmins and academics, dance scholars, many of whom are supported by states and institutions, power structures, essentially. So we see here structural inequalities in the way that we do in so many forms of discourse and practice. And I guess it's remembering that it's no different when it comes to a technique like Katak, just because perhaps it has been less written about even. So Walker points out that many records cite women dancing Kathak as a modern phenomenon, as quite a recent thing in a sense, but she has gone out of her way to find sources that state otherwise. Now, what's interesting again is that some of these sources are quite problematic in that they're rooted in colonialism, British ethnographies of India, for example. But at the same time, she's saying let's not ignore the data that's in them that can actually challenge the sort of patriarchal lineage of Kathak. And so there's this kind of, yeah, it's a super thorough history, but it's also critiquing aspects of the way that that history has been constructed and therefore bringing other things to light, which is for me the thing that's really exciting about research and about scholarship, is that you can do that and narratives get rewritten, and that's how we find out about histories that have been forgotten. I'm often reminded of a statement by feminist philosopher Judith Butler, who I think said, and I'm sorry, this is terrible, isn't it, to misquote somebody, but something along the lines of, it is possible to critique something that we cannot live without. And I often think about that with dance. I think because we fought so hard for a place at the table, certainly in academia, and even in the arts in general, kind of feels like quite a marginalized form. And so it can feel difficult to engage in the critique of its histories and structures sometimes. And there's a desire to really advocate for the practice. Dance is a good thing. It makes us feel good. So why would we want to critique it? But it's important that we do this so that we move it forward, I guess. And so that, like I said, we uncover these hidden histories. So yeah, anyone out there interested in Kathak history, I really recommend this book. And don't stop asking difficult questions, I guess, about the things you love even. And yeah, I think that's it from me. But also, like I said, anyone who can get historiography and choreography into one sentence on a regular basis wins a prize. That's my geek, over and out.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed this month's episode. If you're hungry for more, please follow us on Spotify at the Dance Futures Podcast. You can also find us on Instagram at Dance Futures Podcast for more behind the scenes goodies and updates. Thanks so much. Bye.